Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitar, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I'm very honored to have back on the show, Freebo. Freebo, welcome.
Good to see you, Jeff. Good to be back.
Thank you. It's great to have you back.
Thank you.
And tonight we're going to do something a little bit different, but there's a lot of music involved too. We're going to get a little more philosophical, a little more into Freebo's, the inspiration and the of his latest album, which I'm going to show you right now, is most recent, If Not Now, When? And here's what it looks like, and I recommend it very highly. We had talked about it before a little bit, but now we're going to get into a little more, and it evolved even farther, and I'll let him explain it, into a whole new thing, more than just the music, but like a, I don't know how to describe it, but the key word is heed your calling, if not now, when. So I'm just going to let you explain it, because it's far-reaching and far more involved.
Well, you know, as a, I think as an artist, what we do is whatever the particular genre we choose, whether it be, you know, music, songwriting, painting, mm-hmm. Writing, sculpting, cooking, we kind of, you know, take our own experience and we put it into it. And everything to a certain extent is autobiographical, even if it's not about mm-hmm. you, even if you don't write in the first person, which I do. I write a lot in the first person. But even the second and third person, the change of characters, it's still about the way you view the world. And, you know, you view the world through your experience, through everything you've been through and everything you've learned and what your perspective is. So I found that just in life in general, in conversation, whatever, that the more I share about myself, the more intimate it gets. And it kind of gives the person you're talking to or the person you're singing to permission to share about themselves, and you wind up in what I call the commonalities of humanity, mm-hmm. is that we all have the same emotions, you know. I mean, we put different names, faces, and places to them, but they're all the same. We all know what sadness is, mm-hmm. we all know what joy is, you know, we all know what anger is, and they express themselves in different ways. But if you can put something into a piece of art that somehow either expresses or evokes an emotion, then you're connecting. And I think that's what art is all about, and that's what I'm trying to do in my music as a songwriter, is connect. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'll talk about a subject like homelessness. Sometimes I'll talk about my dog, mm-hmm. You know, talk about politics, just talk about love, talk about life in general, observations. And I think that's what it's about. So the songs on this record, they weren't intended to be a song cycle. They just kind of came, but they're kind of me and my observations about life. And I've recently gotten into doing public speaking, and I call it pretty much a keynote concert. So it's not just speaking, but it's playing music that gives an emotional content to what I'm talking about. So in sharing my story, hopefully it will inspire some other people. And I think it involves certain life lessons that we learn. You know, I think we learn by making mistakes. And Lord knows I made a bunch of them. And I think I've learned from every one of them. And if not the first time, the second or third or fourth. But eventually you learn, you figure it out. You say, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. So a lot of these songs reflect that. And basically the what my talk is about essentially is I'm kind of trying to express how I found a greater joy, not just in playing music. I've been playing music most of my life, and I framed myself as a bass player, and I like that. But I found that along the way, it wasn't enough, and it wasn't about ego. I had plenty of face time and stage time, and I was known, and I was doing okay financially. But I think ultimately it's about self-expression. You know, I think that we all have a need to express ourselves, express our true spirit. We all want to be seen for who we are, or at least for who we think we are. And it took me a long time to figure out that if I want people to see me for who I think I am, I need to show myself for who I think I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, nobody knows if you can produce well. You say, hey, I can produce. I know I'd be a good producer. Well, if you produce anything, oh, but I know I'd be really good. And I've always known that. But in order to really get that happening, I had to create my own product and produce that.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically by playing the bass, I was helping other people to sound good. And that was great. I love that. But I had all these ideas. You know, the reason I think I was a good bass player wasn't because I had great technique. I don't think I have great technique. I mean, bass is very simple. It's just one note at a time. That's all it is. And I like to say it's about playing the right note at the right time for the right reason with full intention. So in order to know what that note is, it helps to know what's above it. And I've always been able to hear that stuff as raised with classical music and Louis Armstrong, New Orleans stuff, and Rodgers and Hammerstein, all the musicals. And I love Stravinsky and Beethoven. I played tuba in the band John Philip Sousa.
Oh, wow.
You know, I liked all that stuff. I even, you know, things like Patti Page and Frank Sinatra and the big band stuff. And then the rock and roll came in where Little Richard and Chuck Berry were filtering over the mountains in Pennsylvania where I grew up. And you know, then the whole 60s thing with, you know, Dylan and Joni Mitchell and the singer-songwriter thing, the Beatles, the Stones, just goes on and on. And they're all part of my influence and all part of my musical palette. So I come from a wide spectrum of music, and each one of them finds their way into what I do musically. So as a bass player, I could hear that stuff, and I would do different things in the bass, and I guess it worked. And I'm really fortunate that I wound up in the 60s meeting Bonnie Raitt before she was Bonnie Raitt. Well, she was always Bonnie Raitt, but before she became known as Bonnie Raitt. And she heard man play in Philadelphia, a place called the Electric Factory, and we were opening for Procol Harum.
Wow.
Yeah. And she came down, I mean, I didn't know it was her. She came down with this guy, Dick Waterman, who was her boyfriend at the time, and he was managing Buddy Guy and Junior Wells and Arthur Big Boy Crudup and Fred McDowell. And he just brought her down because he was interested in managing us, and he wanted to know what she thought of the band. And she liked the band. She liked the way it played bass. So I got to know her. I went to her first gig. And eventually, a couple years later, when my band was breaking up, I got a call from her. She said, I just got a record deal with Warner Brothers. I can make it anywhere I want. And I'm going to make it in Minneapolis, and I'd love you to come play bass and come up and learn a couple of my tunes. So I did, and that worked well, and people seemed to like what we did together. And so I just slid from the end of Edison Electric to the beginning of Bonnie Raitt, and that lasted for 10 years. And the first three were just a duo, just the two of us, and it gave me a lot of visibility. And I developed a certain style on bass with just playing with two people, and playing around the vocal and supporting it and doing little fills and getting down in the groove when I had to.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of an unusual situation. So it wasn't playing with drums, it wasn't with a full band, but then I enjoyed that too, because on the records there'd be a full band. And sometimes we'd play with Little Feet, we'd have some of those guys play with us. So I liked that whole spectrum, and I really enjoyed it on bass, but bottom line of what I'm trying to say is that there's only so much you can say on the bass.
Yeah.
It's not about you. It's like being a tackle on a football team.
Right.
And you have a very important job, and if you don't make your block, it's going to collapse. You know, quarterback's going to get sacked, or the runner's going to get killed. And if you do your job, you don't really get the credit. But it works. I wasn't worried about the credit. I was perfectly happy. But if you're a tackle on a football team, you need a football team. You can't just go out by, what do you do? Hey, I'm a football player.
It's not an individual thing.
Yeah, and the same with a bass player. You don't go out by yourself. You need a band. You need a singer. And so you become what Julie Cameron calls a shadow artist. You know, you're an artist, but not really. You need an artist. A tackle needs a football team.
Right.
So I had all these ideas, and I know where to put them because it was Bonnie's job. It was her tunes, her ideas. That's great. I don't blame her at all. Everybody I played with. But I had all these ideas. I had harmony ideas. I had melody ideas.
Yeah.
I had production ideas. I had lyrical ideas. You know, I had show ideas. And I had nowhere to put them. And so it turns out that, and this is kind of what my talk is about, is how one finds out what one's calling is, kind of by finding out what it isn't. So it's kind of like I think life's about the process of elimination. You try stuff, and if it doesn't work, you try something else. And eventually, if you have the courage and you keep trying different things, you eventually find what you want. So I realized that I had to do something to put these ideas into it, and that was write the song. And I figured that out because I had what I call a burning, churning, yearning. I had this feeling in my gut. A lot of times, it was a frustration. And I finally figured out the frustration was because I had something to say, but nobody would listen to me.
Right.
And so it took me years. I didn't write my first song until I was in my mid-40s.
Wow.
So it took me years to figure out what that dis-ease was about. And I used to smoke a lot of pot, and which was fine if it was the 60s. And I did my LSD, and that was all well and good. And It all took me to an interesting place, but it became my proverbial aspirin for my proverbial headache.
Mm-hmm.
And I never stopped to figure out what the proverbial headache was about.
It was because
I was not fully expressing myself. So the essence of what I'm saying is a lot of people have that going on. You might have a perfectly good job. You might like your boss, you might not. And it might be incredibly fulfilling for you. I think for most people it's not. I think for most people, it's not, you get to express a part of yourself, but you don't get to express your full self. So I think the expression of your full self often happens in something creative.
Right.
And often with no result. It's not about the money.
Right.
I have a song goes, I was born into a boundary, someone else's dream, half awake and headed for a dead end destiny.
Yeah.
That's me. I was supposed to be a lawyer, a doctor, a professional, not a musician. You know, and you kind of try and do that. For me, I failed at it, you know, and eventually figured out that GPS was
right.
Let me tell you about the GPS. That's that feeling about what's going on. And to me, that's the internal guidance system that we all have. And my
gut, the gut
is your gut feeling, and it tells you when you're not doing something right. And that was happening forever, and that's what I kept down. And I finally figured out what that's about. So I'm going to play a song for you. It talks all about that.
Okay, good.
If I may.
Go ahead.
Can I do that? It's called My Personal GPS.
There you go.
It's talking about it. Let me tell you about my angel, the one you never see, my everyday companion, living deep inside of me. She guides me through the trenches. She gets me out of every mess. She's my Bible, she's my buddy, she's my personal GPS. Well, she leads me on the journey, she leads me to the goal. She's always on the money, never leaves me in the cold. And every time I listen, I wind up being truly blessed. She's my Bible, she's my buddy, she's my personal GPS. I'm at the fork in the road, I gotta make a choice. So much going on, I don't heed her voice. So I make a wrong turn, I'm feeling lost and afraid. Then I hear my angel calling, recalculate. Well, I gotta pay attention, this is powerful stuff. I gotta turn it on, and I gotta turn it up. Cause every time I do it, you know I'm guaranteed success. She's my Bible, my buddy, she's my personal GPS. Play it, boy. Floating lost and lonely, I'm drifting in the dark. Will I ever find a harbor? I don't see it on the chart. Or something saying no, someone else is whispering yes, yes, yes. She's my Bible, she's my buddy, she's my personal GPS. Yeah, she is. She's my Bible, she's my buddy, crystal clear and never muddy. She's my Watson, she's my Tunnel, never tardy, always pronto. She's my Sherpa, she's my guide, never runs and never hides. Truly awesome, she's the best, my personal GPS. My personal GPS. She's my personal GPS. I say she's my personal GPS. Yes, yes.
Very good, very good. Now, I got a question for you.
What's that?
When you were playing bass in the earlier days, were you more introverted and kind of quiet, or were you pretty, were you flamboyant? Were you on the stage, or were you just kind of to your, because it seems to me part of that, you had a, in terms of heeding your calling, you had to speak up.
Well, it's interesting because what's gotten me to really speak up is the choice to begin songwriting, because when you write a song, at some point you got to sing it. Because right. Nobody knows how it goes except you. So at some point, even if it's one time, you got to sing it. And you want people to hear the song. And of course, you think it's good. We always think our songs are good, even if they're not. You got to think that. You know, you get better and better. So you sing them out. Well, once I started doing it, I realized that I was afraid to sing. See, the whole process to me is interesting. It's there's a wonderful philosopher, poet named Goethe, a German guy, mm-hmm. and I think back in the 1700s or 1800s, and he said this beautiful thing about commitment. He said, once you commit to something, everything in the universe shows up to support you. It's like a ripple effect, and this leads to that, leads to that, leads to that, but it all starts with a commitment, and until you make the commitment, right. These other confluences do not happen. And so for me, and this is what I'm trying to say in the talk, I'm not saying, you know, be a bass player, be a songwriter, I'm not trying to tell anybody to be anything, but saying pay attention to that inner voice, which is the guidance mm-hmm. system, which I call my personal GPS. It's a feeling of some sort, and you get that feeling when you kind of know there's something that wants to come out. And I like to say, if you don't express yourself, you don't express, you will suppress, and you'll become somewhat depressed because it's just sitting there. So to answer your question, as a bass player, I mean, I didn't really have much to say in the mic because it wasn't my mic. I was not the singer. I was not the leader of the band. I had things I wanted to say, but I didn't really feel like I had permission to say them. So I pretty much stayed up there and was cool and played my bass. Now, a lot of people thought that that was pretty cool, I guess. And in its way, it was, because that's my role, and I think I played it well. And I was happy with that role, but there was another part of me that role would not allow to come out. So I'm not knocking the role. I'm saying I needed to expand.
Yeah, no.
I needed
but
to go
as,
somewhere
But as
else.
A sideman, you are a sideman.
And I'm a better sideman now than I ever was because I have my outlet. I've spoken, I speak, and when I play bass, I just have a good old time.
Right.
Yeah.
And the experiences of what you've done by singing out and doing your own stuff, it applies. Because once you know how to do your own performance, you know how to make support somebody else's performance.
Well, it's like I call it in producing, it's like being on both sides of the glass.
Right.
I know what it's like to be on the performing side of the glass, recording, to where you're a little uptight, you're wondering what's going on, you're wondering what they're hearing. You know that every note you play is going to be there for posterity, so you don't want to make a mistake, right? But I also know that if the vibe when you're out there is, don't you make a mistake, or no, that's not good, let's do it again. So as a producer, I take that side of the glass and I take it into the other side of the glass. So how can I create a situation that's fun, that's safe, that's creative, where, yeah, I'm the leader. Yeah, I can say, here's kind of what I'd like to hear, but I hired you guys because you're really good. So here's the roadmap.
Right.
Now use your own creativity. Just like I would like another side of the glass. Nobody tells me what to play unless if you want me to play a certain thing, put a chart in front of me, I'll play it, and I'm fine with it, and pay me. But if you want me to be creative and come up with what I do and help take that music to a different place, that's what I do. So I think the whole idea about being on both sides of the glass and having been a sideman, you know, I know what it's like for my sidemen when they're with me as a leader. And then having been a leader, I can go back and be a sideman. And so I think it's all about perspective and lessons.
I think you can hear it in the album you did with Alice. It's just definitely the interaction between you. That was a critical part of it, and it's a strong thing. And when you guys were here last time together, you could see it, that relationship.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? That's very important. But I think a lot of that is because, again, coming from your own work and doing your own stuff, you know how to enhance a vocal because you've had it. You're playing guitar right now.
Right.
You're singing a lyric, and you're delivering a message.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a personal one, so it's even more important.
Right.
And what I see happening is you're using the guitar to enhance what you're singing.
The guitar supporting the song.
That's the whole arrangement. I mean, the whole thing, whether it's with the band or you just right now. But that same thing, you know it works.
Right.
So working with somebody like Alice, you know it works. So you listen to her lyric, her song, where she's going, and you're able. And to me, that's invaluable. And that was one of the things I think came out of the last time you guys were here, is you could see that.
Totally
confirms what you're saying right now to me, is that you can see it. I mean, it's evident.
Thank you. And for those of you out there in radio land or TV land who don't know what Jeff is talking about, aren't familiar with the reference, it's something about Alice Howe.
Yes.
Who's this wonderful young singer-songwriter out of Boston, whose latest record called Vision I produced.
Right.
And actually we co-wrote four of the five original songs on it. And Alice is a brilliant singer. I mean, and she just gets better by the minute. I mean, she's a beautiful, beautiful natural voice. She never oversings. The kind of voice you could listen to sing anything. It's just really lovely. And it's soulful without trying to be soulful.
Right.
It's really
a beautiful album. And they came on and he was playing bass. And she was singing and playing guitar, and it's in the archives. You can listen to it, so you can hear what they were doing. But you could hear what we're talking about. You can see the support just with the bass with her singing. It was full. It was perfect.
Thank you.
And it enhanced what she would.
And I learned a lot of that from working with Bonnie as a duo in 71, 72, and 73. So here I am 40 years further up the spiral. I call it a spiral. It's not a circle. It's a circle if you don't learn anything, but if you learn something, you keep getting higher and higher. And so I come back 40 years later, having learned what I learned playing with Bonnie, figuring some things out, now doing it with Alice, and now being a singer and a songwriter and a producer and the whole thing, and having done that. So I appreciate that. By the way, we're doing a show. Well, she's doing a show coming this Friday at a place, wonderful place called Genghis Cohen, which is a lovely kind of a gourmet Chinese restaurant in West Hollywood. It's on Fairfax, just north of Melrose. It's just she's going to do one set at 8 o'clock, and I'll be playing bass with her, and also Fusby Morse on guitar and J.T. Thomas on keyboard.
Great
so we'll
players.
Have a nice little a semi-acoustic band to back her up.
You might as well go ahead and promote the other show that you're doing
well,
at Bogies.
And I'm going to be doing a show of my own at a place called Bogies out in Westlake, a really cool place, on Tuesday, November 19th. I know it's a ways down the road, but...
it's not that far.
Yeah, well, time flies when you have fun. And the older you get, the faster it goes.
Now, if I understand correctly, Alice is opening.
Yeah, Alice is opening, so she'll use my band. I'll play bass with her. And then I'll come on with the band. I call it Free Bonus Fabulous Friends, and they're pretty fabulous players. And we'll do a lot of my own songs. So it'll be a really nice night of music. It's a Tuesday night. It's an off night. And it's a pretty early show. It's like a 7 o'clock show. We'll go from like about 7 to 10.
Oh, that would be awesome. I think, so you get twice the value. Two bands of
two,
one.
Two.
Now, let me ask you something.
Sure.
This is a tricky question, and I don't know. Let me just throw it out at you, because it applies not just to the music, but to anybody, because you were saying this, heed your calling, if not now, when... applies to everything, any type of passion, whether it's a music career, you know, music thing or whatever. How do you know, how did you discover what it actually was that was your calling? Now, I know you're a musician, but the reason I'm directing the question is more for the person that doesn't know what they want to do.
Well, that's a great question, and let me give you a little bit of backstory on that, because, like I said, I think in life, if you have the curiosity, the willingness, and the courage to really find out why you're here, right? None of us asked to be born, and we're born into whatever situation we are. As I said, I was born into a boundary, someone else's dream, half awake and headed to a dead-end destiny. I was told when they said, what are you going to be when you grow up? And then, I don't know. I say, well, the choices I was given, I finally chose doctor. I thought it was the best of all the choices. I didn't choose doctor because I really, really wanted to be a doctor, and I really was curious about exactly how the heart ran. I wanted to get inside. I wanted to heal people. I grew up in a little coal town in Pennsylvania. I wanted to be a football player.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really turned me on, and that's how I could express myself in that town. That's how I could be seen. Like I said, we all want to be seen. You know, call it ego. You know, and it depends on how inflated the ego is, but we all have a voice, right? So we all want to express it somehow. So in this town, I wanted to be a football player, and I worked really hard. I actually became an all-state football player in this little coal town in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I worked hard at it. And then I went off to school, to college, to be a doctor, because that's what I was supposed to do. And my father was a lawyer. My parents had enough money, fortunately, to send me to college. And I went off, and they put me in pre-med, which is what you do to be a doctor, which means they stick you with calculus and biology and physics and chemistry and organic chemistry. And I liked to, and I mean, I failed miserably that I had no interest in any of that stuff. I still can't figure what that has to do with healing people. You know? And maybe I'm probably healing more people now than if I have
true.
No idea. But because music does heal, you know, you don't set out, you just set out to do what you do. But in any event, I failed miserably, and I like to say that me and organic chemistry didn't exactly see eye to eye until I started doing my own organic chemistry experiments in the 60s, you know, and of course everything kind of turned around. But quite by accident, by failing at that, I wound up in a school in Germany, you know, just to try and get the degree. And frankly, to not go to Vietnam, I had no quarrel with the Vietnamese. And I wound up being roommates with a guy named Jerry Donahue, a great guitar player. And Jerry was much more of a guitar player than me. I had picked it up at between junior and senior high school at a summer camp I went to just by accident, just for something you're going to do in the summer to be a waiter. And there was a counselor there who was a Philadelphia folkie, mm-hmm. Marilyn. Mm-hmm. And I loved Marilyn, and she liked me. And she taught me a couple chords in the guitar and a basic strum. And I went back and I told my high school band director, because I played tuba, because I liked the tuba. I didn't plan on being a tuba player. I liked it. I didn't plan on being a guitar player. But so I went back and I told my band director, I learned to play a couple chords of guitar. He said, hey, we've got this old Martin guitar sitting in the closet. Had strings like about this thick on it. And he said, you can have it for your senior year. Went, great. So now I had a guitar for my senior year. Didn't plan on it. Had no plans on being a guitar player. But I had the guitar. I learned a couple more chords. I had a buddy played football and basketball with him. He played guitar. He showed me some more chords. I would play at parties, but I really wouldn't sing because I was afraid to sing. I didn't think I had a good voice. But I'd sing harmony. Mm-hmm. I sang in the choir, but I didn't think I had a good voice. So I really wouldn't sing. Graduate from high school, go off to college, give the guitar back. Wind up 3 years later, Jerry Dunham, my roommate, he's playing guitar the very first day. I find somebody else who has guitar, Bart. I come down. I just kind of start jamming, plunking along with him. He stops playing. He says, where'd you learn how to do that? I said, what? He said, play that bass stuff. I said, I don't know. I just kind of do it. He said, well, you're a natural bass player. We got to get you a bass. So we did. We got a Framus bass. Germany, 1965, for 50 marks, which was $12.50.
Wow.
And we all played through the same Fender piggyback basement. There were four little channels.
Little channels,
put the guitar and the bass and the microphone and another guitar. And that was the band. And that was my first experience. So here, now I'm playing in a rock and roll band, quite by accident, because it just kind of worked out. I go back. University of Pennsylvania. I joined a glee club there, as I like to do that. I met a guy there. He had a guitar. I played his guitar. I said, hey, you're not a bad guitar player. There's another guy in the glee club plays guitar and piano, and he can hear Beatles songs. He can just hear chord changes. I thought, well, that's no big deal. I can do that, too. I thought everybody could do that. I thought everybody could hear chord changes or something. Apparently, everybody can't do that. My musical ear was somehow formed over with all these little musical things I did, not to be a musician. I was on my way to be somebody else's dream, to be a doctor. Didn't work out. None of it worked out except for the music, bit by bit. So I meet this guy. I sit down. I play with him. We hit it off. He said, hey, we're starting a band. We need a bass player. I said, I can do that because I was playing bass with Jerry Donahue. That started the band, the Edison Electric Band. We wound up playing at the Electric Factory, opening for Procol Harum, met Bonnie, we got a record deal, the whole thing. So that's how it happened. So that's how I became a musician. And one day, literally, on LSD, I'll tell you folks, just because it was the time, it was 1968, I happened to be thinking, what do I want to do with my life? You know, because I was not working out well the academic side and the doctor thing. And so I started thinking, I thought, what's the most important thing in life? The most important thing in life is to be happy. I thought that's too simple, but I said, no, that's, so I thought, what makes you happy? Well, what makes you happy is doing what you love to do, seeing what feeds your soul. Not eating a chocolate bar that makes you happy for a minute, it's great, but that's it. But I said, playing music really makes me happy, and I'm good at it. I thought, you can't be a one-legged man and try to be an Olympic sprinter. So I had the ability, and I thought, well, what do you need in life? I thought, you need food, clothing, and shelter. You'll die without that. So I thought, if I can do what I love to do, which is playing music, and I can make enough money doing it to make my food, clothing, and shelter, doing something that makes me happy, getting everything that I actually need, not trying to be a success, but be happy. That it actually took that moment higher than high for me to come to that realization. It turns out it was kind of brilliant, really. And at that moment, I said, I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to be a bass player, because that's what I'm doing. I was playing bass in a rock and roll band. I was making a little bit of money, not much. But I said, if I focus on this, I might be able to make enough money for my food, clothing, and shelter. I'm going to give this a try. And it worked out. It worked out. It's quite by accident, by failure. And so here I am now on some big stages like Carnegie Hall, playing bass with Bonnie Raitt, who nobody had heard of at first, and eventually people are going, wow, she's really good. And it was through that process that I realized that just the playing bass, as cool as it was, there was something else going on. That's the GPS thing. And that's when, years later, in my mid-40s, I finally figured it out. And yeah. I said, I got to start writing songs.
Well, it's interesting what you said there in terms of you focused on being happy as opposed to focus on being successful.
And, right.
And to me, by doing that change of mindset,
right.
you took the stress out of it because it's stressful to be successful.
Well, I think
I got to do this, but to be happy.
But I took the intent. I took it from them and society. Without even thinking it, I mean, I'm not trying to take credit. It just kind of happened. To me, it was, okay, what makes me happy? You know, and by following right. their dream, it was not making me happy. What, you know, it just kind of happened. So, I mean, the message is, here's the bottom line, is that since I made that decision to start writing songs, and have been doing it and singing and playing my song and making my records, that burning, churning, yearning is gone. It's not there. So I must be doing something right. And I'm not trying to tell people, I'm not trying to tell anybody to quit there. I'm not trying to tell anybody anything, really.
Right. Well,
but the message is, I'm not trying to say quit your day job, but I am saying that there's something that you probably have always wanted to do. You know, it could be climb Mount Everest. You know, but it could also be I always wanted to learn to play guitar. I always wanted to learn to sing harmony. I always wanted to do whatever. I always wanted to learn how to cook a Chateaubriand, whatever it is. I'm saying that if you don't do that and you really feel that calling,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I think everybody has it one way or another, it sits there and you wind up not expressing yourself. And it's not about doing it well enough to make a lot of money. The second verse of that song I talked about is Born to a Boundary is, well, it ain't about the money and it ain't about the fame. You'll never find your happiness in someone else's game.
Yeah.
And I think most people are playing someone else's game. They're in the corporate world because you have to be. It's a corporate society.
Well, corporate is, yeah. It's
yeah,
a game.
So I'm not saying quit that, but when you go home, when you have your time on your own, find something that really feeds your
yeah.
soul. And if you do that, you'll actually show up at work happier
yeah.
because you're expressing
well,
yourself.
And the job becomes a means for you to express yourself.
Exactly.
So you work to do that. So exactly. you're looking forward to that, and then the job isn't as bad.
Yeah, my friend, I don't know if you listen, Keith Hawkinson, if you're listening, I love you, buddy. He was at the same school when I met Jerry Donahue, but he wrote this post where he said talked about that it's the man's the person who finds what he loves to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, who finds his real happiness. And then he put his own addendum in it saying, yeah, that's all well and good if you can afford to do it. Well, I would add an addendum to that. I would say, if you go about to do that, like Goethe said in his quote about commitment,
mm-hmm.
that if you set about to do what you know you have to do for your higher purpose, the universe will come
mm-hmm.
together and it will support you so you can do those things. You know, and you may not make the living on it. You may have to keep your day job. But in some cases, look at J.K. Rowling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't set out to be a billionaire by writing Harry Potter stories. She was doing whatever she was doing. It just kind of came out.
They were stories she told her kids at class. She was a teacher.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it developed from there. But in it's like it's no longer a gig for you. It's a vocation. And it comes to me. That's what I'm seeing.
Well, it's fun, Jeff. It's
yeah.
like, let me play this song for you.
Yes.
This kind of speaks to the whole thing. It's actually the
perfect
album.
Timing. I was going to just ask you to play one.
Well, this is the album title. If not now, when?
Okay, I'm going to flash this up.
And it speaks to the whole thing. And again, I'm sharing my message, but I think it's a lot of people's message. And this song seems to. A lot of people seem to relate to the song, seem to speak, but it's, and again, I think it's what art's about. This is about my journey, but I know there's other people out there going through the same thing. So is called If Not Now, When? And I thought to myself when I was 45, if I don't start now, by the time I'm 55, I'll be in the same place. And I did start at 45, and I'm now way past 55. And I'm not in the same place. The burning, churning, yearning is gone. So let me share this song.
Okay.
If not now, when? When I was a young boy, I had these dreams. Time didn't matter, or so it seemed. Now I'm still a dreamer, like I was back then. But time keeps screaming, if not now, when? Hundreds of heartaches and broken down plans, so many what ifs, and what if I can't? My fear held me captive, case in a pen. Time to break free, boy, if not now, when? If not now, when? If not me, who? I can't pretend, oh no, 'cause I know it's true. I make this a vow, time is now, if not now, when? Doubting and blaming, it's time to let them go. 'Cause this healing journey, it can go so slow. I hear these voices again and again, on calling, if not now, when? If not now, when? If not me, who? I can't pretend, oh no, 'cause I know it's true. I make this a vow, I swear, amen. The time is now. This leap of faith without a net. Hello to destiny and goodbye regret. If not now, when? If not me, who? I can't pretend, oh no, 'cause I know it's true. I make this a vow, we're aiming, my time is now. Oh no, if not now, when? I'll make this vow, I swear, amen. My time is now, if not now, when? If not now, when? If not now, when?
There you go. That's excellent.
That's the message.
Yes. Yes, it is. That's I think what you're talking about, it's really poignant right now, because I think a lot of people, the way society and things that are happening, it's just changing so much.
It is.
A lot of, well, you probably could relate to this too. I mean, I majored in studio guitar. That job that used to exist, I mean, there are some studio players, it's gone.
Yeah.
And when you used to, I'm sure you would get called and you would go to like three different studios over the day, play for this guy, play for this guy. That's all gone now. It's different. There is some work, but it's a much fewer group of people. And just recently, some of my other stuff that I've done, working on Blu-ray for Panasonic, that job's gone. It changes so fast. And I think a lot of kids, too, they don't know what to do because it's...
Hey, it's tough growing up now. I mean, I'm so glad I'm not a kid. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I had a lot more life left than I do know what I know. But to be growing up, it's such a corporate world. If you don't work for the man, it's really hard to make a decent living, you know. And so I think it comes down to, you know, like if a kid were to ask me, you know, what if, say, okay, a kid's graduating high school. Okay, so you say, okay, what are you going to do? Somebody says, well, look for a job. So, okay, I'm going to go and on job search. Here are the jobs that I can have. Which one should I choose? I would say, don't go that way. Don't go look for the jobs. Say, what is it that I like to do? What is it that I would like to do? What is it that I want to do? And then see if a job exists that allows you to do what you love to do and what you're probably good at. You know, and if that job doesn't exist, maybe find a way to make that happen. That's what entrepreneurship is all about. Mm-hmm. I know it's easier said than done. You might have to work at Starbucks and McDonald's or whatever. But in the process, use that as a means to an end. The end is not that job. And for so many people, it is. And I think there are a lot of not so happy, you know, and very frustrated people in this world. And I think it's because they're settling. And I think society, it's really hard not to do it. Because it is. It's really tough. It's tough to make ends meet. But I think once you get the success in the two-car garage and, you know, and a lot of people think that their happiness is going to come from the money they're going to make that's going to allow them to buy the happiness. And literature through the millenniums seems to say, I mean, look at all the kings and queens that were not happy who had everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many rich people. So I'm not saying that it's bad. I'd love to have more of myself, but if I have to prostitute myself to do that, that's not going to make me happy. My GPS is going to tell me that.
Right. If you're not happy in the first place, getting all that money is not going to make you happy. You're going to still be unhappy with a lot of money.
And the truth is, I'm happier going out as Freebo playing my solo house concert for 40 or 50 people than I was with Bonnie Raitt playing at Carnegie Hall. I love Bonnie. I love Carnegie. It was thrilling. It was wonderful. They were great times. But that, again, that GPS, because I was not fully expressing myself. Hey, I would love to do a gig with Bonnie at Carnegie Hall now, and I feel great because I have this other outlet. I'd love to do my own gig at Carnegie Hall. But, you know, when I play at that house concert or maybe at the church for 100 people at a Unity Church or a Center for Spiritual Living, you know, which I did on Sunday. In fact, I spoke there. I played my music and mm-hmm. I spoke there. That was my Carnegie Hall. I felt great, you know. I walked out with enough money to help support me, and I felt like I touched a lot of people with my song. I saw smiles. I saw tears. That gave me the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't buy that.
When you see somebody react to something you've created in a way like that, that emotional. And I think, and any type of artist, whether it's music, or you know, you're a novelist or you're a painter, feedback is vital because that's part of the process. You express something as you do in a song, and it's that feedback that completes it.
Well, and that leads me to the last song that I want to play. It was perfect, because like I said, my mother, a seminal figure in my life, who said, you know, basically be a doctor, you'll be a success.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work out. So when I decided I was going to write songs, you know, I told my mother. And earlier, she said, when I told her I was going to be a musician, she said, you'll never be a success till you play at Carnegie Hall. When I played at Carnegie Hall, I called her up and said, Mom, I'm Carnegie Hall. But that burning, churning, yearning was still going on. Fast forward to my mid-40s. I said, I'm going to write my first song. Fast forward to not my first album, my second, my third, where she finally starts to think, oh, he's pretty good, right? And one of my songs becomes her favorite song, not just of mine, in the whole world. I submit this song to a songwriting contest called The Posies, and it gets nominated. And it's in Florida, the award ceremony in Orlando, and she's in Fort Lauderdale. So I spent the night before with her when she's 99 years old.
Wow.
And I go, Mom, I'm going up to Orlando tomorrow for this award ceremony. I was nominated for one of my songs. She goes, oh, that's great. What song? I said, That's What Love Is. She said, I love that song. That's my favorite song. I really hope you win. And I said, well, Mom, it's an honor just to be nominated. And she went, no, it's really important that you win, right? You're not a success till you play Carnegie Hall. So I went off to the contest, and sure enough, I won. The winner is Freebo. I went, yes, that's wonderful. So at the trophy, so I'm going to give this to my 99-year-old mom down the road. It's her favorite song. Next day, I walk in, I hand her the trophy, and she says, what's this? I said, Mom, it's the Posse Award. She said, you won. I said, I did. She said, for what song? I said, for That's What Love Is. She said, oh, I love that song. It's my favorite song. I forgave her. She's 99 years old. And then she said a wonderful thing. She said, you know, I'm so happy for you because now you're finally a success. Now, that was a little sideways, but to me, it was where the success path that she put me on to be a doctor met the soul path. The soul path is my path that I didn't know what it was. I knew some. I was looking for it. You have to look for it.
Yeah.
Fortunately, my spirit, my soul allowed me to. And fortunately, what they told me to do didn't work out. So sometimes mistakes are really good, you know.
You have to.
All
that's my the way
mistakes
you learn.
Got me to exactly where I'm at. So yeah. I want to share this song.
Real quick, because he's going to take us out. Freebomusic.com is where you can get more information on his music and also this. He does seminars, and keep an eye out over there. You can get on his mailing list so you can do the seminars. Before you play, thank you so much for coming on. I think
Jeff,
this is a great message to have. And I'm going to leave you with this song, That's What Love Is, and we'll see you next week. Everybody have a great one and follow your passion.
Thank you, Jeff. That's what love is. It's a whisper you hear in the midst of your fear, it's revealing. It's a part of the heart, and it's just who we are, it's so healing. It's a power inside, always wins over pride, never judges. And it strengthens and comforts us all. That's what love is. It's a healer of souls, makes the broken ones whole and completed. It's what gives you the strength and the hope when you're feeling defeated. It's a power inside, always wins over pride, never judges. Strengthens and comforts us all. That's what love is. And it's patient and kind, and it's deaf, dumb, and blind to the madness. It's the ace of the dealer of truth, it's the healer of sadness. It's a place that you know from so long, long ago, and it's freeing. And you feel when it's there, 'cause you're able to share from your being. And it takes us all higher, and it lifts and inspires all it touches. It's the best part of being alive. That's what love is. Patient and kind, and it's deaf, dumb, and blind to the madness. It's the ace of the dealer of truth, it's the healer of sadness. It's beyond right or wrong, and it's not weak or strong, it's not winning. For the young and the old, it's a brave and a bold new beginning. It's the peace and the hope, it's what helps us to cope, it's forgiveness. It's the light that will always always endure. It's eternal and simple and pure. That's what love is.